core process psychotherapy. Can you explain a little bit how it works? What is the basis of it?
Well, I don't know where the term came from, but it kind of evolved. It acknowledges the fact that the person is a process. They are not a thing, a self, or separate from the things that arise within their psychological, emotional, physical, spiritual awareness. And that the core or source or the mind that is non-conditioned, in Buddhism, bodhicitta, rigpa, pristine awareness, that there's an aspect of our human being which is aware, awake, and compassionate. So core process psychotherapy starts from an assumption that that's part of our human nature, and that any of the pathologies that develop, the neuroses, the difficulties, are in part because we've lost contact with those aspects of our nature. It includes an understanding of the developmental context of psychological difficulties, especially attachment theory. But it's also based on an understanding that human beings are not separate. At some level, the mind is not separate. And that the practices of the Buddha, one of the things that he was very keen on, apparently, was don't believe anything, even your most cherished beliefs. And for me, maybe that's Buddhist beliefs, if you like. But unless they are realized, they are not true. And so core process psychotherapy, although it has got to fulfill all of the requirements of professional psychotherapy in Britain, the focus very much is on developing the inner capacities of the practitioner. And that includes developing a relationship to their well-being, a relationship to whatever we like to call it, source, the divine, bodhicitta, that aspect of their nature that we all share as human beings, no matter what our situation or our dysfunction happens to be. Once the therapist has got a real ongoing sense of well-being and a connection to that which offers meaning, then they're in a position to settle into paying attention to another human being. And of course, we've got to write essays and do all the theory and all the hours of practice and supervision. In some ways, you know, it can look exactly like any other psychotherapy training. But the focus very much is that it's the therapist's capacity to be affected and listen in a particular way to the other, which offers the center of the relational process that makes a difference and gets communicated to the other person.
Yeah, so in a, let's say, traditional psychotherapeutic training, the therapist learns to look at their own hang-ups and their own problems.
Yes.
But this will take it a step further.
Yes, in training, we all have to be in our own personal therapy. We have to, as you say, work with the residues of our conditioning, identify that and its effects. And in some ways, that aspect of our nature could be described as uncovering the nature of our beingness, or that sort of existential sense of being. So a return to being is very important. How you do that will differ person to person. But it's these deep, deep wounds of our being that then form the basis of these neuroses, secondary patterns, personality structures, self-referential systems, along with our familial, cultural, social conditioning. We need to get back to a place where our sense of well-being does not depend on our situation. From that place, we can start to be more open to the aspects of our own minds and the aspects of other people's minds, which can offer more of an orientation to a natural sense of love, compassion, joy, and a deeper sense of belonging, which is not based on our individual identity. So I guess it's a movement towards an embodied experience to connect us to our human beingness and the human beingness in other people.
So yeah. Then there's, on the part of the therapist, there's a much more openness, completely free of all the usual patterns.
I wish. I mean, that's the intention. The intention is to listen to someone non-judgmentally and to be affected, but not affected purely emotionally. That there will be feelings around and there will be resonance with those feelings, but in Buddhist terms, the central ingredient of compassion is called anupankam, which is empathy, a very deep empathy, which is non-personally based. It's to really get the kind of suchness of another person's situation, tathata or essence, I don't think it translates very well, and to really get that at an embodied level. You'll never know how it is to be that other person, but you'll get the centre of it, if you like, or the whole of it, if you listen long enough and if you're open long enough, until it's almost like something reaches a critical mass. And then something sometimes just completes naturally, but sometimes it needs a lot more revisiting, a lot more work. So yes, it'd be great to say that our therapists listen to people non-judgmentally, but human beings are judgmental in their nature also. And human beings like to think that they understand things. But the therapist, just like a meditation practitioner, would be then alerted to the fact that she is having judgments, feelings, responses, and they then become part of her own mindfulness-based practice. They become part of what's happening in the room with herself, with the other person, in the space between, and in the larger space that holds all of this. So we're working in a field of both neurotic patterns, but also there's a field of well-being that is co-present, that's co-emergent with that. If we ignore that there's something more wholesome that we can relate to, then the difficulties become everything. It's not that we're trying to get rid of the difficulties, because the mind that's well and the mind that's confused co-arise. So the therapist is a constant practice, and to the extent that she can pay attention to herself as well as the client.
Maura Sills, in 1984, you started the Karuna Institute with your husband, Franklin Sills. In the institute, you combine Buddhist techniques with psychotherapeutic techniques. What are the main Buddhist techniques that you have applied in the training?
You know, we don't apply techniques. It's very simple. Although our teachers come from all Buddhist traditions and other spiritual traditions and no spiritual traditions, as do our students, because we're not looking at any religious outcome. But basically, if you take the two central practices of intention and awareness, which are at the center of mindfulness practice, of awareness-based practice, but remember the third factor, which is one that quite often is forgotten, which is what happens then. So that there's a sort of a receptivity that occurs if your intentionality is clear, free from ignorance, including the fact that, you know, these terms, anatta and anicca, that, you know, there is no separate self and that everything changes. Then the sign that the mind gives back when you put intention and awareness, whether you apply it to your personal practice, whether you apply it in relationship, whether you apply it to the wider field, the practice is the same, but it's the focus of the field, the person, the situation in which you're listening that then makes it a relational practice. And I think that mindfulness is a relational practice. I think if you read the suttas, if you read what the Buddha taught, then it was meant to be a relational practice. And I think the embodied relational practice of mindfulness is what Buddha's technique, if you like, applies. We don't teach other things to the students. All of the work of the personal inquiry at the Institute, which includes the pre and perinatal work, includes the trauma work, includes Western developmental theories, especially attachment theory, these are so as the therapist has tilled the soil in herself and it starts to be familiar with these territories. And when she meets the other person, there's not going to be so much that she cannot meet in the other. And so the capacity to keep listening beyond cognition, I think those are capacities that come out of Buddhist practice.
And you mentioned the word mindfulness. What is the difference between the core process psychotherapy and mindfulness-based therapies?
There are so many mindfulness-based approaches coming into the Western psyche at the moment. And I think it's great. But the use of the word mindfulness, I think, needs to be looked at through a dharmic perspective. And to pluck mindfulness out of the ground that it is grown in and its companions is sometimes to use just aspects of mindfulness in the work. So mindfulness, just simply translated, means bearing something in mind. So it's a simple thing. It's nothing new. However, you can use it as a technique to help people start to see that what they thought was forever isn't, what they believed in isn't, always true. What they think is changeable and conditioned. And I think it's great that so many more people are getting these tools to start to deconstruct their problems, their personality. However, mindfulness within a spiritual practice means more than that. There's a Pali word, it's sampajana, and it means absolute awareness. And absolute awareness isn't mindfulness of something, it's a state of mind. And that state of mind occasionally co-arises within the therapeutic relationship, occasionally. You don't aim for it because it's not something you can get. But if you pay attention, if you continue to commit yourself to coming back to paying attention, not just to the obvious, but the more and more subtle things that you can become aware of, the non-cognitive, the aspects of mind that are to do with pure knowing, and also with non-personal knowing, so it's not me knowing this, there is just something being known, then that brings us more and more deeply into the transformative powers of mindfulness. And these aspects of mindfulness get communicated through realization, through truly being in these states of mind and in relationship. And I recently read a quote, and I wish I could remember who it was by. Mindfulness, if you touch into this moment without history intruding and without being driven into thinking about the future, if you can stay in present time and deeply touch it, then all time is known. And so these conditions of the past that then dictate how we're going to be in the future, even if it's for a millisecond, if they can pause, if they can stop, then the individual, the client and the therapist have just got a moment where all of those beliefs, all of that negativity, all of that conditioning ceases. It just drops for a second. Gradually over time, those seconds, you start to trust them more. Something gets cultivated that you can trust more. And that happens for both the therapist, hopefully, but also clients seem to be able to trust themselves more in their own personal journey.